From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm your guest host, Scott Pukas. Our connection this hour was made September 22nd, 2004. That was the debut date of the television drama Lost, about a group of strangers who are on the fateful flight of Oceanic 815 that crashed on a mysterious island seemingly in the middle of nowhere. The debut season of Lost quickly became a sensation. Alluring mystery of polar bears, a monster, and island lore coupled with strong characters and twist-filled flashbacks was irresistible to fans. Not only was the show popular, it was the ultimate water cooler program. Fan theories filled Reddit. Writers like Doc Jensen from Entertainment Weekly spent each week spinning wild guesses for what exactly was happening on everyone's favorite island. But as the seasons went on, the luster of Lost began to wear off a bit. Some fans became wary of mysteries that seemed like they'd never be answered, while others stuck with it through filler episodes and plot missteps. The series finale in 2010 was met with mixed reviews. This particular host loved it, but many, many did not. But now, 2 decades after the pilot episode and more than 1 decade after the show aired its final episode, Lost is still captivating audiences. Diehard fans who have watched the entire series 2, 3, 4 times. New fans too young to watch in the early aughts now binging through the 6 seasons on streaming services. This hour, we're diving into what made Lost an iconic television program and where it fits into the golden era of television. I'd like to welcome my guest. In studio, we have Todd Sedano, television historian at St. John Fisher University, where he teaches in the new film and television program. Welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
Joining remotely, we have Bob Thompson, trustee professor of television, radio, and film at Newhouse School of Public Communications. Welcome, Bob. Maybe wait a moment for Bob, perhaps.
No, I'm here.
There you are. Yes, I can. Welcome. Yep. And also in studio, we have, and you can pause for dramatic effect too if you want, Luke. We have Luke Mayo, co-host of Movie Chumps, the podcast, and all things cinema. Welcome.
Honored to be here, Scott.
So I'm going to note right from the beginning that Lost has a huge fan base, millions of people of all ages and backgrounds. Our panel today happens to be all men, but that is not representative of the fan base. So what I'm saying is we want to hear from you this hour. You can call in at 844-295-TALK or 585-263-9994. We're also going to have minor spoilers this hour, but no big spoilers. So if you haven't watched Lost, we won't be ruining any big twists for you. Stay with us this hour, learn some stuff, and maybe go home and watch Lost after this, after Connections. Okay, so I'm going to start with a bit of context. We're going to begin with you, Luke. How many times have you watched Lost?
2 times. I watched it initially, and then just this summer, so we wrapped it up in August, I conned my 2 daughters, 10th grade and 8th grade. Shout out to Allie and Julia and my wife. We all watched it as a family, and they were absolutely riveted. So it was a great rewatch. I actually liked it better on the second time around. I think I was able to kind of appreciate more of the things like the nuances, the score. You know, instead of just worrying about where the plot's going, I was able to appreciate a lot of the relationships between the characters.
That's just great parenting, getting them right on the Lost train. I love that.
Well, here's the thing, though. They can't scratch that itch now. Like, they've watched Lost, and it's like there's this hole in their heart that, you know, we're trying to find that show to replace it, and it's just not happening at this point.
There aren't any like that. All right, Todd, I'll go to you. How many times have you watched Lost through?
Probably just the once when it first ran from 04 to 2010.
All right. And Bob, are you a multiple viewer of Lost or just once?
I watched it with great energy the first time through, and then about 2 years later watched it completely through again. And then I've taught some episodes, so I've kind of picked and chosen since then. It's interesting when you say, we're worrying about spoilers and everything. If you were to ask me right now to spoil Lost, I'm not sure how I would do that. I mean, Citizen Kane, okay, you tell them what Rosebud is. Who shot JR? You can spoil that. I don't know how I would spoil Lost. It gives away things, and it was always too confusing as to what there was to give away.
That's a good point. Yeah, we could talk about like Dharma Initiative and really dive into the lore. Yeah, I don't think anyone would know it. And I think that's why it's so intriguing. There was so much mystery and so much stuff that you don't get from other programs. And I think that's really what intrigued me to it. Pop, do you have a favorite? This is a tough question, but I'm going to go right into it. Do you have a favorite episode or moment, or you mentioned teaching? Do you have one that you really like to show your class?
Well, I think the first 10 minutes is really extraordinary. And, of course, that doesn't get into any of the mysteries. Well, it does after a while. But we start out in this kind of almost Edenic, mysterious. There's the eye and the woods and all of that kind of thing. And then that emergence out into, the beach, and we finally see civilization in the form of completely destroyed wreckage of this planet. And I think those first minutes are really kind of extraordinary. But that entire those first two seasons, when we're still being brought into all of this detail, all of this complexity, before we realize what an experimental Dada game that this is ultimately going to be playing, I think those first two seasons were some of the most compelling television I had ever watched. And I've been around a long time, and I've watched a lot of television.
All right. Yeah, and actually, so I did want to talk a bit about the pilot episodes. I feel directed by J.J. Abrams, and that did, like you mentioned, Bob, felt so groundbreaking. So, Todd,
it cost $14 million, I might add.
Oh, I did not know. And so what, in context, how much did a TV pilot of that era typically cost?
Oh, I would say back then, even a big new pilot with high budget was probably closer to four.
Oh, okay. So that's a big difference. It was a two-hour pilot, so maybe that helped it. Todd, did you watch when this first aired?
No, I had a student of mine at Syracuse under Bob's tutelage and mine who made a Burns DVD. This is how far back it goes. And it was a bootleg copy, but to Bob's point, just watching that first 7 minutes, it just takes your breath away. And you don't come up for air until finally you see credits start to roll and you realize you're watching a TV show and you're not on the island with them. And it's really, really compelling right away. And let's also not forget, it's not just J.J. Abrams who wrote it. The story was pitched by Lloyd Braun, an executive at ABC, who was watching Survivor and thought, wouldn't this be interesting if we could do a scripted version of this? He gives the idea to J.J. Abrams. J.J. writes the script, then gives up the show to Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof. And then you have 25 hours of this series in the first season. I mean, when you talk about the first two seasons, my goodness, that is a lot of content to cover. And that's what they had to do, which was, in 2004, de rigueur for American television. Nowadays, you're never going to find something like that expensive for that many episodes.
Yeah. So we actually do. We're not going to go to it right here, but in a moment, we do have a clip from the pilot. So it's the end of the pilot. So again, I guess that's my minor spoiler, but it kind of leaves a nice hook. But before we go to that clip, I'll go to you, Luke. What were your first thoughts watching this pilot? Were you immediately blown away and intrigued and wanted more?
Immediately hooked. It took me a little bit of time to get into Lost because for the first probably three seasons, I was kind of, as the kids say, a hater. I was like, look, there's too much hype on the show. How good could it possibly be? Then eventually I was roped in. I buzzsawed through, the first three seasons, and then eventually caught up to it live, I think, season four. But yeah, I mean, like you guys said, it's compelling, and it's cinematic. And to capture that in that first couple episodes, especially when you have Jack just kind of running around trying to help everybody. You get the one dude that gets sucked into a propeller, and you're like, oh, wow, this show's doing a little something different here.
Yeah. That opening scene on the beach is so thrilling. So yeah, we're going to go to this clip. So this is from the end of the pilot episode. So this is when the survivors, they want a radio signal. They're hoping to radio for help, and they hear a French voice that's on a loop, and they eventually find out what this is saying. And I guess this is a spoiler. It maybe is bad news for them. So let's play this clip.
16 years. What? 16 years. And 5 months, that's the count.
What the hell are you talking about?
The iterations. It's a distress call. Plea for help, a mayday. If the count is right, it's been playing over and over for 16 years.
Someone else stranded here?
Maybe they came for them.
Someone came. Why is it still playing?
Jason. Where are we?
Guys, where are we? That is iconic. That's how it ends. And you're hit with the lost across the screen. I just think that sticks with me even, you know, 20 years later. So, Luke, what were your thoughts watching that scene? What was racing through your head?
I just love, too, because if I'm not mistaken, it's kind of a slow zoom into Charlie's face
yes.
right when he says those words. And that's kind of what you're thinking as the viewer is, where are we, guys? Right? Guys, where are we? It's one of those episodes that it's hard to think of another show that is so compelling that makes you want to watch that next episode lickety-split, right? Like, you see that ending, and it's like, boom, where are we? What's going to happen next? And that was the case through all six seasons. It was just constant riddles, constant questions being answered, and then you're fed even more questions.
Yeah, and listening to that, I'm going to go to you, Bob. One thing that really stood out to me right there was not only was there so much groundbreaking with the way this was shot, but I also think the score there from Michael Giacchino, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but his score I thought was groundbreaking too, especially for television. You got a little taste of that in that clip. So, Bob, can you give us some context? Was this really groundbreaking for TV at the time?
Yeah, well, not only the score, but even the way they used actual existing popular music through the ages was really, really effective. By 2004, we'd had some pretty fancy scoring. I'm thinking of Miami Vice way back in the 1980s, which paid very, very much attention to its score, and which was so important to that show. And, of course, Twin Peaks, which Lost would not have existed without Twin Peaks. In many ways, they are siblings in so many different of their properties. And that, of course, used a score in an almost relentless kind of way. There's that quote, well, where are we? I always think when I hear that, I don't think these characters needed to wait till the end of the pilot episode to ask that question. I think it was fairly apparent from the very beginning. But it works on so many levels. I think it's not only where are we, the people in this show, but kind of a where are we in general. And this program always operated on kind of an allegorical sort of way. And, you know, we've been talking about that first scene on the beach. This is 2004. September 11th was not that long ago. Airplane wreckage had a still very, very powerful set of it carried an awful lot of baggage during that during that period. And even the title Lost it operates in so many different ways. A lot of those characters were lost before they even got there. Jack's dad is both lost in that he lost him, and he's lost in that his body is lost. The thing really just works on so many different complex ways. And going back to your question about the score, usually whenever we do these retrospectives, you open the segment with the theme song of the show that you're about to talk about. For all of the opulence and brilliance and dramaturgical significance of that score, the theme song was about as minimalist as a theme song is going to get.
Yeah. Sticking with the pilot, Todd, I'll go to you. What other things really stood out to you about this? I mean, there was so much that happened there, aside from what we've talked about, but there's also hints of a monster. There was a polar bear. There was enough, like, odd stuff where you're like, what? Yeah, like Bob had mentioned, like, where are we? Could have been asked multiple times before that.
Yeah, and when you list all of those, Scott, I'm thinking these are all the earmarks of shows I never want to watch. Which includes smoke monsters and polar bears yes. and unexplained phenomena. But the show Lost was memorable and still is memorable 20 years later because the characters stick with us. Yeah. When you hear the name Hurley, you know who we're talking about. When you hear the name Sawyer, you know who we're talking about. Even the dog, right? We know.
Vincent, yeah.
Yeah, Vincent, we know we have a relationship to that dog 20 years later. So in that first episode, we are introduced to really well-developed characters. If this were just a show revolving around plot, I don't think we'd be talking about this 20 years later. And a lot of the iterations that followed it that tried to emulate and imitate it failed because those characters weren't as well drawn out as these were. And that's, again, a credit to J.J. Abrams and that writing team.
Yeah, and I think, so I recently had a rewatch as well, which is, you know, one reason I wanted to do this hour. And that is what stood out to me a lot was I didn't care as much about the mysteries the second time, but it was the characters, and I was surprised how much I cried throughout the rewatch at various points, and they were all those big character moments with Vincent the dog. I had a big moment where I was crying a bunch. So, Todd, do you have a character that was, I guess, either your favorite or one that really resonated with you a lot while watching?
Probably Locke.
Oh, okay.
There was a certain humanity that he brought, a certain confidence and also insecurity that I find myself exhibiting on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
So that spoke to me over the last, 20 years.
Don't tell me what I can't do. So many famous quotes from this show.
Well, even when he's talking with Jack and he's like, why are you so, I forgot the line he says to him. Like, why is it so easy for you to believe? Jack tells him. And Locke says, why is it so hard for you to believe?
Yes.
And just in a nutshell, you know who these people are.
That man of science versus man of faith, like a constant throughout, the constant as well. Luke, do you have a character that really resonated with you or one that you would call your favorite?
I can't articulate why, but I always was drawn to Desmond. I think just part of that mystery with him, especially when he's first introduced in season two, that first episode, which I adore, just his relationship with Penny. I just love that kind of old school, here's two people in love that are trying to get back to each other. But Jack, I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with. I love the fact that he's always trying to be the hero, trying to save the day, trying to fix whatever is wrong. But you also despise him for it so many times because it's like it's his way or the highway. And he's, he has that tunnel vision in so many episodes. So probably Jack, big picture. But it's hard to pick. I mean, it's hard to pick that top three. It's hard to pick that top five characters because there's just so many. This is a deep bench, to take a sports analogy.
Yeah. So as we're saying, it's hard to pick a character. I'll ask you the same question, Bob. Is there a character that you really sticks out with you on Lost?
The one I still to this day remember most is, of course, John Locke. And by the way, what about these names, Hume and yes. Locke? I mean, this is like my philosophy syllabus when I'm watching this program. But I think Locke, in many ways, is kind of the the Greek chorus, the Rosetta Stone. If you follow him throughout this whole thing, it's almost as like he's signaling, he's giving clues in many ways to what this show is all about right off the bat. We don't know that because there's this whole crowd of characters that's being paraded across the stage in the beginning. But there is a real sense in which I think he has kind of got the attitude it's going to take to get through this kind of absurdist thing that we're about to see for 100 and some odd episodes over 6 seasons.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to mention something from my chat here from producer Julie, who says Vincent was the MVP of the show. Hard agree. And she says my cat was named Sawyer and dog named Boone. So I do love that quite a bit. One character I think that was my favorite, and I guess this was why I was talking about even minor spoilers, because I guess even mentioning this person's existence who doesn't come on till season two and has an introduction that's a little misleading and a little tricky is, of course, Ben Linus. And Michael Emerson, I think his line deliveries and humor are so good throughout it. How much did the addition of Ben in late season two and then later in season three, when he really became a focal point, how much did that change the aspect of Lost, Bob?
Oh, I think he was a really important character, and the one that I kind of think of that was always with Lost. I always have to be reminded that, of course, obviously he came in according to the storyline much later, but he again becomes very much the soul of that in his almost cowardly lion-like delivery, which you pointed out, I think, very aptly.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that Bob says cowardly lion. I was thinking more of the man behind the curtain of the mighty Wizard of Oz, right? It was such a great introduction of that character to this universe that we've all inhabited for a year plus when Ben arrives.
Yeah, and there is actually even a season three episode called Man Behind the Curtain, which is a Ben Linus flashback. So that is very apt.
But I'll his name is Linus, so I'll stick by my cowardly lion.
Yes. In line one, we have Tim from Rochester, who is rewatching Lost again. And I'm intrigued by this. I guess the more he watches, the more he feels he can't distinguish between the show and real life. So we're going to go to him. I want to know what that means. Tim, can you hear us?
Okay. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
It's quite poignant. I watched it for the first time. I went to the library and I got it all at once. So after the season had already or after the series had already completed, I started watching it. So ditto to everything everybody said already, but I went ravenously through it. I didn't do anything else for a week. So I'm revisiting it now because the landscape, especially politically, you know, it just seemed to me, you know, just with some of the advances in technology right now, you know, it goes to the whole door, the hatch and everything. Where are we? Like, where are we? So the last thing I'd say is just that it's such a parallel. And my favorite scene is definitely with my favorite character, Jacob, you know, when they're talking there about the progress, everything else is just progress. That's my conversation with any political contemporary these days.
That is a really interesting take. Thank you, Tim. Stay on the line so you can listen in on us. Yes, that was interesting. And you mentioned Jacob too, which of course comes in later. So if you haven't watched that, that's not going to make any sense. But that's a name that kind of trickles throughout, and you're like, what? That is another one of the many, many mysteries. So I'll go to you, Todd. You know, we're talking about mystery and lore. Obviously, you mentioned the character is a big part of it, but can you talk about the lore? How much of the appeal was just, you know, people coming up with theories and trying to figure out what all this meant? Smoke monsters, polar bears, what is this?
That was such a huge part of the culture surrounding Lost fandom during that period. Let's remember, when this is on the air from 2004 to 2010, this is a turning point for American television, where now we're going from broadcast networks getting all the attention, with the exception now of cable with HBO and The Sopranos and 6 Feet Under getting all the critical praise. Now you're starting to get shows like Lost that are a little more confusing for people. They're trying to get a different fan base. I mean, Bob mentioned this before, shows like Twin Peaks, which only lasted a couple of seasons on the same network a decade earlier. But what happens with television at this point is it turns into social media as a juggernaut for these conversations. And it was message boards that was popular then. For the young folks listening who are like, what is a message board? there were people who would follow these internet message boards and respond to each other about these conversations surrounding the series. They would follow television recaps on websites like Television Without Pity, and they would read these very voraciously before things like Twitter and TikTok and Instagram appeared. And so by the time that Lost ends, now you have Twitter, now you have Facebook, and now you have other social media where people have these conversations. But during the time that Lost was on the air, you have people like Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof, the showrunners, who admitted that they were checking those message boards and realizing, oh no, this is not good. They know where the story's going. They got there sometimes before the writers did, and that was very problematic. So understanding the historical context of a show like Lost is so, so, so critical, especially how fans engaged with it.
Yeah, fans are so smart. I personally can't come up with theories that are correct, but yeah, all of Reddit they can. So what I'm curious about, so Luke, you were rewatching with your family, with your daughters and wife. So as you were doing that, do they come up with theories and trying to guess what happened, and you just have to sit there and be like, you'll see, wait and see.
Especially early on, they would toss out a lot of different theories. We would have to just kind of look at them blankly because we didn't want to give anything away. We also had to convince them because, again, they're, you know, 8th and 10th grade, so 13 and 15. Don't Google. You know, don't look it up. It's going to ruin the magic of the show if you start poking around. Even if you think you're searching for one thing, you're going to end up realizing that this character died or this character, you know, did this. But yeah, I think just having that whole like mystery. I kind of forgot what you asked. Now I went off on my tangent here.
We like a tangent. No, I'm so curious about rewatching with your daughters. And
yes,
I think that's so tricky when they're like, oh, I know what the monster is, and they guess, and you just have to not say anything, I guess.
So, well, here's the thing too: is my wife and I had forgotten so many of the aspects of the show. We remembered some of the key, and I got to be careful here, some of the key deaths that have happened throughout the 6 seasons. We, of course, remembered the finale pretty well. But other than that, we didn't, there was just a lot of unknowns, even though we had both watched it before. So in many respects, it was like watching it for the first time, which was nice.
So, you know, we've been gushing a lot about Lost and talking about it. But, of course, a lot of people were disappointed. So I'm going to read an email. I haven't read this off yet, but it's in my chat screen. So this is via email from Evan Dawson. Our host is emailing in. So he says, Scott, I'm in the category of disappointed Lost super fans. I love season 1 through 5. Two major problems with the ending. First, it's fair to say that the creators were never going to tie up every little mystery, but by abandoning so many mysteries, they made it clear that they had given up. Years later, the writers claimed that every time they answered a big question, they'd get some audience complaints about it. So instead of focusing on solving the puzzles, they shifted to focusing on the human stories almost exclusively by the end. He says, sorry, but that's a cop-out. People had invested years. You had an obligation to at least try to tell the story. And second, actor Josh Holloway recently said that even if he is not sure what the ending signified, if the cast is confused and half the audience is confused, you've done a poor job in your storytelling.
Let me just stick it to Evan really quick because we're former teammates over at 13 Wham when we worked together. Love the guy. I will say this. On the rewatch, I was surprised by how many mysteries they actually did explain and did wrap up. So I wonder if he's rewatched, and maybe you mentioned that in the email. I wonder if he's watched it since. I think he might be, Evan, I think you might be excited to see what they do end up revealing. Of course, there's always a couple, you know, loose ends that they didn't tackle and a couple pivots that were controversial, but I think he'd be pleased on the second watch.
Yeah, Todd, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, if I may. Recently, HBO had its newest iteration of the True Detective anthology series, which I thought was excellent. And I worried going into that final episode they were not going to be able to wrap up all the stories. And I didn't want them necessarily wrapped up, but I wanted it to be a satisfying closure, which I think Lost had to an extent, which Evan might disagree with. But I think we get to a point now in television where we want that kind of closure and we feel like we deserve that kind of closure. But that kind of openness, I think, is what makes a lot of good storytelling. Look at Lost, look at The Sopranos finale, whether Tony Soprano was shot at the end or not. Bob's on the line could tell us all about Twin Peaks and how people had no idea what was going on, and yet it became the most fascinating thing to watch 30 years ago.
Yeah, so Bob, I will ask you, yeah, are Evan's criticisms here, is this fair?
Well, first of all, I come not to bury Evan Dawson, but to praise him. I'm a big fan of Evan Dawson. We've had many wonderful conversations. I think he's a wise guy. And now I think I agree with that again, because I think I very much am the opinion of how this wrapped up. And it was interesting how it happened. I remember watching that final episode. And when it was over, the last scenes, I really loved it. I was very moved by it. I thought it was one of the best final episodes I had ever seen. And then as the hours went on into that evening, I liked it less and less and less. And by the time I woke up the next morning, I really didn't like it. But then over the years and seeing it again, as you pointed out, I've kind of come around again. So I guess any kind of dramatic piece of art that gives us that kind of that gives that kind of a complex relationship is in itself interesting and worthy of discussion. But I do think there was a sense that show had become so much about being an interactive experience, about providing catnip, these constant sort of things for people in the emerging environment of social media to talk about, that by the time Lost was over, the show wasn't what Lost was. It was the paratext that was our relationship with the show as it went around, and I think it kind of got out of control. I will say this: I'm glad that you're doing this, because I would like to invite more and more people to discover Lost. It is about the most perfect show for binging, as I can imagine. It just every episode invites you to go to the next one. But I will say that outside of the fan base, outside of all of us who are kind of converts here, I think the afterlife of Lost has been really, really compromised by the reputation, whatever we think of it, of that final episode and how it wrapped up. I think the general conversation about Lost is that it disappointed, is that you go through this whole thing and it doesn't deliver. And I think a lot of people, and I've talked to a number of them who have said, oh, I've never wanted to make the investment of 120 hours of watching or 121 episodes of watching Lost because I know that it's, you know, it's not going to be worth it. I've heard that many times. I guess if someone were to tell you at the very beginning of a relationship that after 6 years of going out and celebrating anniversaries and going on trips and all the rest of it, that that relationship was going to end in an unsatisfying way, would you bother to go through the whole process? And I think Lost has a certain cloud over it that has kept people from watching. And to those, I would say it's still worth going through that trip, even though when you arrive at the destination may not be near as fun as the getting there was.
I think I agree with that. We're late for a break, so we're going to take that in one moment before, so our listeners can think about that and ponder as we go to break. But when we return, so if you're just tuning in, we're talking about Lost this hour. When we return, we're going to talk about Lost context in the golden era of television. And we have a little treat, too. I think Lost has one of the best fictional songs of all time, so we're going to give that a little listen, too. So we'll be back right after this break. I'm Scott Pukas, filling in for Evan Dawson. Coming up in our next hour, we'll preview Year 6 of Anomaly, Rochester's Genre Film Festival, November 6th through 10th at the Little Theater. We'll dive into the festival's origin story, break down what exactly a genre film is, and get a sneak peek of the upcoming lineup. Plus, we'll speak to the filmmakers of Dead Male, an 80s thriller about obsession and devotion. All things Anomaly, that's next on Connections. Welcome back. We are talking about Lost this hour on Connections, the iconic television show that debuted in 2004. My guest, if you're just tuning in, I'm joined in studio by Todd Sedano, television historian at St. John Fisher University, Bob Thompson of Newhouse School of Public Communications, and Luke Mayo, co-host of Movie Chumps. So before we went to the break, we got a lot of info from Bob here talking about Lost. And Is it worth the journey if you maybe are not satisfied with the end? So Todd, let's go to you. What are your thoughts on this? Do you agree? What are your thoughts on it?
This is why I've loved learning from Bob Thompson over the last 20 years, just because of that metaphor. That relationship that we have with a series is so integral to also how we talk about the show Lost. Because if you binge on it, you have a different experience from the rest of us who watched it week to week, who had 167 hours in between episodes to digest what we just saw. And there was garbage in there. There was not good stuff in there, right? I mean, I don't want to rewatch that show just because of the tattoo episode with Jack. And that's all I remember, is that it involved a tattoo. And that's enough for me not to want to commit another 120 hours. But understanding how we had those conversations and what's missing, and Bob mentioned these paratexts as these relationships serve in our relation to the show. When I remember the show ending in 2010, I had moved to Rochester from Syracuse a couple of years prior, and I remember watching it on ABC that night, and there was a national spot during the commercial break and a local spot, and the national spot was a smoke monster, and it flies in, and you hear the sound of the smoke monster, and then there's a smash cut to a Target commercial for a smoke detector, and you just hear, bing! And then you see a smoke detector. And it was a quick 15-second spot in, out. When you're binging on the show now, you miss that paratextual conversation, right? Locally, the place where I had purchased my Honda from back then, Dick Ide, you had a shot of Rich Ide opening up his eye in extreme close-up. And you're thinking it's the show Lost, but it's not. It's a car dealership. And you see him ending up on a mound somewhere in Penfield looking around. And then the smash cut to the eight numbers, followed by the sound effect, whoa, Dick-eyed Honda. I mean, that stuff's amazing. That's the stuff that we miss out on if we just binge this over the course of a couple of weeks.
Those commercials are brilliant. I don't think I remember any of those, but that I love that.
Do a
so
YouTube
much.
Deep dive to find those
I
later.
I think I might. And actually, I wish we had pulled sound from the Smoke Monster. I talk about iconic noises. Like you hear that, and I would just get chills because it's like this force that could kill anything, but sometimes would choose to spare someone. It was such an intriguing mystery. And so we've talked about so much, Luke. And I was going to mention this at the beginning, and then we went off on a tangent, but do you have a moment that is one of your favorites or one that you'd really just like to talk about? And you could maybe talk about in vague sentences if we don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, this is super tough. And I kind of hinted at it earlier, but the first episode of season two, where we first meet Desmond, just the needle drop of an old, I think it was a Mama Cass song, which plays, and just kind of the context and how they introduced Desmond was absolutely brilliant, to the point where my daughters, who I mentioned earlier, they've watched that like scene multiple times since the rewatch. I think that make your own kind of music. Absolutely. Thank you. And then probably when they show Jacob and his counterpart, we shall say, I want to be very careful here, on the beach, again, being very vague, deep into the series, where you finally get a little bit more backstory on like the history and the mystique of the island, that like re-brought me back in just when things were getting a little too sci-fi at times.
Yeah. So that what you mentioned, the moment with Jacob. Yeah, that's the season finale of
five.
Season five. Yes, the incident is when that debut comes out. And yeah, that was a moment I think fans had been waiting for and were intrigued by.
And the Hurley joyride of the Volkswagen van, the big blue van, that was a big hit in the family because they had mentioned it earlier. And again, trying to be vague here, but it was a nice little piece of joy in a series that was like a lot of gut punches.
You actually set me up perfectly, as we have an email from Sheila, who actually mentions the joyride. So what she says is, one of the best things about Lost was the way the characters were all searching for redemption. They were also flawed, yet they managed to find some joy in their purgatory on the island. Again, not literally purgatory. This is metaphorical purgatory. Some of her favorite moments, she says, season three, Trisha Tanaka is Dead is the name of the episode, and that's what you just mentioned, Luke, when Hurley finds a van and he goes joyriding with Charlie. She mentions a moment from season three, the season three finale, Through the Looking Glass, which is my all-time favorite episode. I think it has humor, adventure, you talk about crying during a certain moment.
Brutal.
So if you haven't watched, this won't make sense. If you have watched, you're going to know what I'm going to say. Her moment was not Penny's boat was the thing. So again, that's not really a spoiler, I don't think, if you don't know the context of it, but truly a heartbreaking and brilliant episode. And then she also mentioned season four, when it starts showing the interconnectedness of the characters and why they can't leave without each other, also based on the tech of the times. And she says her theory is Linus equals Linux, LINUX.
Mm.
So thank you for your email, Sheila.
You know what I love
it.
About that email? The part about the redemption.
Yes.
And as we got into the 21st century, we had gone, the entire history of television from the late 40s was so much about these heroes and perfect characters, doctors who made house calls and lawyers who always got the bad guy put in jail and all that kind of thing. And that totally flipped as we got toward the turn of the century. The anti-hero became positive orthodoxy. And when I'm thinking of some of the great series from this era, what is The Sopranos about? A really, really bad guy who in the very first episode gets an opportunity for redemption, and he immediately rejects it. What was Breaking Bad about a little later? About a really good guy who gets an opportunity for damnation and takes it by the time the first episode is over. Lost, on the other hand, was really this, for all of its modern, postmodern storytelling and dramatic techniques, was a really old-fashioned show. It really was about these people seeking redemption. I think of the song we hear at every memorial and everything, I once was lost and now I'm found. That's pretty much, I think, what every one of those characters were looking for. And I think, if I understand the final episode, I'm not sure I do, I think to some extent that might have happened.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe that Bob Marley's redemption song is played too. I think maybe Sawyer sings it at the end of season one as well. And yeah, that redemption, that is really one of the best recurring themes that's throughout. And I think that, again, is what makes it so everlasting. It's those characters, their redemption, their search for redemption. Todd, I'm going to go to you, as I've mentioned to our other guest here, of what is a moment stands out, our favorite moment, favorite episode. I know that's hard to pick among 100-plus episodes. Do you have one that really sticks out in your mind right now?
You kind of hit on it before, the Not Penny's Boat. In preparation for today's show, I thought, let me just pull that up on YouTube. Let me take a look. I'm not going to be moved by it because, you know, this happened 20 years ago. I've seen it a number of times. And, whoo, wow, that's a lot to handle. Jeez. It's really something else. And I think Luke introduced the topic of the show being cinematic, and Bob was talking about the score and everything. I mean, it's just everything coming together. Michael Giacchino's work is just phenomenal, and it's inextricably linked to the show Lost. Without that score, I don't think I would have cried half as much as I did throughout the six seasons of that show.
They always talk about movies being moments, right? But I would argue that Lost almost carries the torch for saying TV shows can be moments, too. Moments that you remember, moments that move you. I feel like, compared to a lot of other shows.
Yeah, I really like the way that you put that there. So I'm realizing right now that I probably could have done like 2 hours on Lost. There's still so much to go on. But I do want to talk about a little. So for me, and either Bob or Todd, you can correct me on this. I feel the golden era of TV was like 2000s to maybe now or something around that time, maybe like late 90s with Sopranos. But where, Bob, I'm going to go to you first for this. Where is Lost place in this golden era? It's so much different. It's network television. It was a drama on ABC. 24 episodes, debuted in September, ended in May, had a summer, and then they'd come back, which is just not how, you know, TV shows are done anymore. So, Bob, what is Lost place in television history?
Well, I think it comes right in the middle. I mean, Lost wasn't the first show to get complex and cinematic and sophisticated and literate and elusive and all that kind of stuff. That started in the 80s. Hill Street Blues was really the downbeat for that, and St. Elsewhere and Moonlighting and all of that. Then in the 90s, we moved into the likes of Twin Peaks and The Sopranos. So that by the time we get to Lost, network television, because the cable didn't get around to this, while network TV was doing Hill Street Blues, HBO wasn't even doing original series, and those that they would be doing soon were pretty bad. O.J. Simpson starring in First and Ten, you know that had to be good. But anyway, so this had all happened. Lost, I think, becomes kind of the apotheosis of all of this 20 years of more and more sophisticated cinematic literary television, combined with some of the new little quirks that had come in, like Survivor and reality TV that had come in 2000. And Lost is on kind of the cusp before we are about to get the big explosion of quality TV coming from streaming. So if it started on network TV in the 80s, it goes to premium cable and even basic cable in the 1990s, streaming would pick it up a little bit later. For example, Orange is the New Black, one of the first shows after House of Cards and Lillehammer that Netflix starts doing their original series, owes an awful lot to Lost in its parallel character developments and its flash sideways and backwards and all of that kind of thing. So I think Lost didn't innovate any of those things, but it was very much right in the center of this golden age of television, which I think starts in 1980, and I think we are in 81, and I think we are very much still in, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, Todd, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah. The only part I would disagree with Bob on is I think that last part, I don't know if we're still in it necessarily, and here's why. When Lost premiered, there were roughly a couple or 200 shows, American television shows that were scripted that were on the air at that time. 20 years later, where we are now, that number is just under 500. And this is what the head of FX, John Landgraf, warned against almost 10 years ago when he called it peak TV, P-E-A-K. It wasn't that we're at the pinnacle of the most incredible writing, productions, etc. It was everything Bob just described is not sustainable. This is going to fall off a cliff at some point, and we're going to lose quality. We're not going to have the budgets to produce these kinds of shows, and you're not going to see the criticism. You're not going to get the journalists writing about this stuff to give the show the oxygen. Oxygen shows the need to survive. And so what happens then is the writer's strike happens last year, or for the last year and a half, whenever that was. The actors went on strike. And you couple all of these with more shows and less money, and now we're kind of regressing back to more comfort TV. I think Jamie Pony Wozzeck wrote about this in the New York Times a couple of months ago, mid-TV, which is kind of where we are now. A lot of these other series don't seem to be as time capsule, if I can use a lost metaphor, as some of those shows that we saw in those other eras that Bob's talking about.
Though I think we were there at mid-TV, and mid-TV is nothing new. Mid-TV has been the standard of TV from the beginning. In the very season that Lost debuts, the number one show in the country was CSI, mid-TV procedural. Number two and three were American Idol, based on talent competition shows that went back to radio. Number five was CSI Miami, another kind of thing. So there's always a lot of that bad stuff, and there was back then as well. Matter of fact, one of the first seasons, if not the first season, Lost came on Wednesday night, I think at 8 o'clock, season one, followed by The Bachelor and Wife Swap. That was ABC's lineup. So that tells you the kind of diversity that the golden age of television that we talk about, or the second golden age, the platinum age, whatever we want to call it, that's been happening since the 80s, and I contend we're still in, has always happened parallel with most of the other stuff that isn't very good. But that's true in poetry and novels and music and anything else.
Yeah, and whether Lost plays in the golden era of TV, I do want to get to our last clip, Rob, if we have time for it. I think the one thing that we can't dispute is Lost has one of the greatest fictional bands of all time, Drive Shaft, which I previewed before the break. So we're going to play a clip of the song, You All, Everybody, so it's going to be stuck in everyone's head this afternoon. So go ahead. That clip was You All, Everybody, Drive Shaft, the fictional song from Lost. Luke, did you want to join in with Charlie's falsetto in there?
You know, it's just, and I love how they just kept that kind of gag running, right? I think the first time we even hear that clip, it's just Charlie kind of singing it, right? And the falsetto is traveling along the island, you know, You All, Everybody. And he says it a couple times, and some people recognize the song and the group. And then they just keep going with it, right? At one point, there's like an ad, I think, or like a commercial that they're filming where they're like in diapers, the Drive Shaft band. And they just keep like adding it onto it. It's almost like the writers respected the whole Easter egg thing with some of these characters, and they just kept sprinkling those a little bit of that magic in throughout the series.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we're wrapping up here. This hour has gone very quickly talking about Lost. So, I just want to ask each of our guests before we go if there is any other moment we haven't touched on Lost that you'd really want to mention, whether it's the humor in it or certain acting, could be anything you want. I know that's kind of a vague question. I'm going to start with you, Todd.
Yeah, there's some funny lines in there. I mean, laugh out loud funny. There's a scene where John Locke gets a compass from Richard L. Purdy, and he's like, what is it? He's like, it's a compass. What does it do? And it's a really tense moment, and Richard's like, it points north, John, and it just allows us to all exhale for just a moment, even though it's still hella chaotic.
Those one-liners are so good. Like I said, Michael Emerson, like his delivery to his band, and Richard, as you mentioned, they're all so good. Bob, do you have something that we haven't mentioned that you would like to?
You know, the thing that I remember most about this show are those numbers that you had to always put in, or I don't know what, something terrible would happen. There are days in my life, and a lot of them, where I think that most of what I do is punching in those numbers on the sheer faith that it's something I'm supposed to be doing. I love the metaphor that those numbers carry in that show, and it's the single thing that I remember most about Lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the numbers, there's so many different moments. I think one thing that kind of stood out to me before I go to you, Luke, here was one of my favorite tropes, and I noticed this rewatching, how often someone gets knocked out by like the butt of a gun or a single punch. Like when the plot needs them to just go cold, it just boom, punch, and you're out. Luke, you rewatched it recently. Was there any moment that you really love with watching with your daughters? Real quickly.
No great moments, but I like the numbers aspect that Bob mentioned, and I think the line that I used to kind of hook my parents into now watching it was, this is the Lost season is the best Twilight Zone episode that's ever been made.
I love that so much. So as you can hear, we're having Tribe Chef. They're playing us out here. This is our encore. So thank you so much. We were talking about Lost this hour. Please, if you haven't watched, go watch it. Rewatch it if you already have. Thank you so much to my guest. We have Todd Sedano, television historian at St. John Fisher University.
Thank you, Scott.
Bob Thompson, joining us by phone, trustee professor of television, radio, and film at Newhouse. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thank you.
And Luke Mayo. Thanks for joining us, Luke.
I want to take Bob and Todd's classes now.
Yeah, everyone sign up.
Thank you, Bob. I owe you my career. Thank you.
Thanks to Rob and Julie behind the glass.